You're listening to Megiddo Radio. Megiddo Radio is a radio ministry of Megiddo Media. For more, visit our website at MegiddoRadio.com. That's MegiddoRadio.com.
Welcome, this is Paul Flynn with Megiddo Radio for the 20th of January 2018. Thank you all for tuning in. On tonight's program, we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. I try to keep things changing the topics as much as possible. Been talking about Bethel the last two programs, mainly for... I think for my own sanity, I try to keep changing things. Not keep changing things, but... for example, if you talk about the charismatic movement for a couple of episodes, try to change it around and talk about something a bit different. I will be returning, though, to some of the topics that I was talking about, but just take a break from it today. It will be only Megiddo Radio only today. There's not going to be any Megiddo TV for anybody who's listening to this, because I put the last three TV shows up, the one at the end of 2017, because I had somebody on the program, and I generally like to keep that Megiddo TV, and the last two programs I felt were really, really important. And actually, two programs ago, I had a topic, which was basically Bethel Redding's New Age Theology, and I was only going to talk for 5 minutes, as I do, on Michael Brown, and then I realized, oh, I spent 30 minutes talking about Michael Brown, pretty it was good stuff, but yeah, that's kind of how that worked out, and it ended up being an episode really just me expressing my concerns about how Michael Brown has been conducting himself and being, well, the critic of critics, as he's become to be known over the decades. But he's been doing it for a very, very long time. I'm going to, by the grace of God, hopefully, I hope now, to return to talking about... I'll be responding to a radio program Michael Brown did recently about what he claims are the misconceptions of the charismatic movement. And hope to return that on Tuesday. I might not get a chance. The reason is I'm preaching next Wednesday again by the grace of God. And Lord willing, please give me your prayers about that, actually. In my church midweek prayer service. So that comes first. If there's any clash with me preparing the messages. I got a lot of notes already done for it. I just have to stick it into a sermon and things like that. But at the end of the day, this has to come first, and if there's any kind of clash and I need to work on Tuesday night, well, Tuesday night's radio program is gone on that. So, and also, if you've got shows that you would like me to cover, I'm going to try over the next few weeks. There's a lot of things I want to do, but that's nothing new there. Please email me, megiddofilms@gmail.com, sermons or anything else you'd like me to cover. People ask me to cover topics sometimes, and I'm like, great. Could you please send me on a link to or examples to what you're talking about? And I'll be, if I have something constructive to add, I will be pleased to respond to it. But sometimes some of these topics are just like massive or stuff that I would have to do a ton of research into to even verify. And I think you know what I mean. So just please send me on video clips or whatever. That would be great. There's so much to cover, but we'll see how we go. And I'm hoping again I'm going to do fewer TV shows just so that I can keep this podcast more regular. All right. So on tonight's program, we're going to be talking about Jordan Peterson. Now, I don't know if you know who Jordan Peterson is. Jordan Peterson is a professor at the University of Toronto, a clinical psychologist, and he's an author of a new book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. Not a professing Christian from what I can see, but he believes in evolution and all that kind of stuff. So he was on Channel 4, which is a UK, one of the main channels in the United Kingdom, for those who are not aware, those who are listening outside of the UK, and people in Ireland and Britain would know what Channel 4 is. He was on that program talking about, well, it was just basically he had an interview, was going through trying to really, well, dig up dirt, I could say, on him. She failed miserably. Her name was Kathy Newman, who is a presenter for Channel 4. And apparently, according to The Guardian, she's received a lot of abuse. Quote, vicious, misogynistic abuse after this interview. We're going to try and go through as fast as possible. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it, but I do see it as a good example to see and to look at feminism and you can say the far left, but definitely feminism and a few other ideologies in Western media. And Jordan Peterson is a very, very intelligent guy. He seems like a very reasonable guy, very... he doesn't seem to hate people or anything like that. Now, he's not a Christian. I have to point that out. I don't agree with everything he says. There's a number of things even during the interview he says that I don't agree with. But the way he's being shut down to express those views is wrong. Now, he's very much seen as a spokesman or kind of like a representative for free speech. All that we want to do in this program is, whether it be legislation, state level, or anything else, it must conform to the law of God. Romans 13. All ministers of God. Now, he's not a magistrate or anything like that, but I'm just saying, what we should be pushing for as Christians, I think we end up so much pushing for free speech. We don't realize, well, the Bible doesn't say anything about free speech. The Bible talks about God's law. Magistrates, the state, and the church are supposed to uphold that. Now, the ways in which they can uphold that are different. The church does not have the power of the sword. The state does. So, the way myself and Jordan Peterson will look at things, but what I found fascinating about this interview on Channel 4 was it was intelligent. You know, the interviewer was, and well, we'll play in a second, you'll see, was really, really bad because she just wouldn't listen. But it was intelligent ideas. This side of the Atlantic, I don't know, but in the United States, there's a lot more intelligent debates that kind of go on. But generally, it's very hard to turn on the radio, turn on the TV, to hear anything but slight variations of collectivist, socialist ideologies and very anti-Christian ideologies. Stuff, very totalitarian ideologies, and it's going more and more in this direction. And most people don't mind because it fits in with the way they see the world. Okay? And anyway, we'll play through the video. I thought it was interesting. And Jordan Peterson, just for those that are aware, kind of got popular because he said he wasn't going to follow the dictates of the government saying the kind of pronouns, these are all the kind of nonsense that he could and couldn't use. But I don't think he'd be on the same page as us at all, by any stretch of imagination. But I think a lot of the points that were brought up during the interview, we'll play as much as possible, as fast as possible, and we'll comment where possible.
Jordan Peterson, you've said that men need to, quote, grow the hell up. Tell me why.
Well, because there's nothing uglier than an old infant. There's nothing good about it. People who don't grow up don't find the sort of meaning in their life that sustains them through difficult times, and they are certain to encounter difficult times. And they're left bitter and resentful and without purpose and adrift and hostile and resentful and vengeful and arrogant and deceitful and of no use to themselves and of no use to anyone else and no partner for a woman, and there's nothing in it that's good.
So you say, I mean, that sounds pretty bad. You're saying
it's
there's a
bad
crisis of masculinity? I mean, what do you do about it?
I'm just wondering, is this supposed to be... Now, you see, if you look at the whole interview, she's very much trying to find things to throw at him. And, you know, it's very much on the attack from the entire thing. And there's no really attempt to interview. There's an attempt to kind of get in a gotcha moment, right? So this is not really an interview. This is really a hit piece. I think Jordan Peterson knew that, but I think he also knew, and he has enough experience, he seems like a guy who's willing to go anywhere. But it's pretty obvious. I suppose feminists a lot. I don't want to broad brush feminists. Not all feminists are the same. And not everybody would define feminism in exactly the same way. But the thing is, often feminists don't want men to be men. They don't want men to be assertive, leaders, fathers. They see it as misogynistic. That's why I kind of have a bit of a little bit of skepticism. And if anybody is abusing her, sending her threatening things and all that, this is Kathy Newman. Stop it. It's ridiculous. There's no justification for it. The ends do not justify the means or anything like that. It's wrong. And Jordan Peterson said some words to that effect on his Twitter. Stop doing it if people are doing it. But how people define abuse now is heavily open to interpretation, shall we say. Now, the fact that men, what it is to be a man, is highly hated. But for women then, for feminists and modern women, all this massive pressure for them to go into the workplace and to have, and there's an incredible pressure to, and eventually a lot of them want to become mothers and wives. A lot of them, usually later in life, you know, started being late 20s and early 30s. Now it's becoming late 30s, but gradually and so on. But there's that massive pressure to do both. You cannot do both. And this is not to say that a woman cannot biblically go into a job. Or that a wife and a mother cannot have any type of employment. However, what I am saying is, it's not possible that a woman can have a full-time job and also take care of children. I mean, a full-time job now. There's different hours and things you might be able to, I don't know, some people have their children at a school and things like that, and they work the hours which are at school. I have no problem with that whatsoever. You might have a situation, if they're small children, you need to keep them home, you need to train them, you need to instruct them. And don't stick them into any school. The school you stick them into is your responsibility. The best solution for you might be homeschooling, especially for the Christian who wants to raise them according to what the Bible states. I can go into this in another day because I don't want to get too sidetracked, but it needs to be a Christian education, as we know from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 8. And train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. So those Christian principles ingrained in their life over and over again, in the same way that the kind of picture that's used in as Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 8, teach them diligently unto thy children. The word there in Hebrew is whet, W-H-E-T, and the idea of like kind of sharpening a sword, and it's over and repeated over and over again, and you need to do it diligently, otherwise the blade will get blunt. But if you do too much, you sharpen a sword too much, it can break. So there's that over and over, and it takes a long, long time. But again, there might be situations that can work. For example, my wife, she teaches piano. I mind the kids for a few hours, but it's only for a few hours a week. It might be possible. There's no regular principle, for those who are aware of the regular principle of worship, there's no regular principle of women doing jobs and stuff like that. There are jobs that do not suit women. You know, being fishermen and things like that. Okay? But, so there's a lot of jobs women can do, but you can't do everything. And there's this basic premise. Men and women are different. The feminists and the leftist ideologues don't want men to be men, especially in a biblical sense. And women who want to stay at home, they're looked down upon and pitied. And I thought a lot of the themes that came up in this interview were very, very interesting, and we'll comment further on this as they come up. And what is happening to men as well, their role has been taken from them. What I mean by that is they're discouraged from doing, from being the way they're biologically wired. Now, men since the fall have, because they're sinful, and men and women are sinful, men since the fall relinquish their, they don't want to be leaders, okay? This is the way I explain it. Ever since the fall, prior to the fall, Adam was to lead his wife, Adam and Eve, okay? So Adam was to lead his wife, Eve was to submit. Now, ever since the fall, you have sin. So sin drives you away from what you're supposed to do. That's a simplistic way of saying that. What happens? Men relinquish their leadership roles. Men and women want roles they're not supposed to have. Doesn't mean one has greater value than the other. That's not true. Equal in value, different roles. And there is undoubtedly a crisis in men. And I don't know why, sadly, that is now seen as controversial. But anyway, I digress.
You help people understand why it's necessary and important for them to grow up and adopt responsibility. Why that isn't a shake your finger and get your act together sort of thing. Why it's more like a delineation of the kind of destiny that makes life worth living. I've been telling young men, I wasn't specifically aiming this message at young men to begin with. It just kind of turned out that way.
And it's mostly, you admit, it's mostly men listening. I mean, 90% of your audience is a men.
Well, it's about 80% on YouTube, which is YouTube is a male domain primarily, so it's hard.
I'm not sure what the point is of this. I'm just not going to say much about this, but, it's mostly men listening to you. So, if it was 90% men, what would that matter? Yeah, and a lot of YouTube, he's right, is, I don't know what the breakdown is. I actually, sometimes I check the demographics and a lot of my videos as well. I think the vast majority, if you look at the breakdown, is men. I haven't really thought why that is, but generally that's the case.
To tell how much of it is because YouTube is male and how much of it is because of what I'm saying. But what I've been telling young men is that there's an actual reason why they need to grow up, which is that they have something to offer, that people have within them this capacity to set the world straight and that's necessary to manifest in the world, and that also doing so.
Well, they don't, but this is one of the places I would, disagree with Jordan Peterson. We do not have the ability to set the world straight. Only God has set the world straight, and he's not going to do that again until he comes again and brings in the new heaven and the new earth. The reason why there's problems and suffering and evils and injustice and all that, sin. Man's heart
is where you find the meaning that sustains you in life.
So what's gone wrong then?
Oh, God. All sorts of things have gone wrong. I don't think that young men hear words of encouragement. Some of them never in their entire lives, as far as I can tell. That's what they tell me. And the fact that the words that I've been speaking, the YouTube lectures that I've done and put online, for example, have had such a dramatic impact is an indication that young men are starving for this sort of message, because, like, why in the world would they have to derive it from a lecture on YouTube?
One of the reasons, and often we can make jokes and there can be kind of parody videos. Like, I'm a millennial. I think millennial is generally defined as born 1984 or younger. I know there's kind of Generation Z after that. When that starts and begins, I'm not too sure exactly. But you got millennials. And young people, and generally, there'd be jokes and this kind of some videos online that are quite funny about the fact that a millennial might not know the time before 12 o'clock or 11 o'clock. And I was definitely of that generation. From Ireland, I'm not too sure internationally, probably maybe similar, more spoilt. I remember, like, for example, my older brother, who struggled through college, and it would be quite common for that generation. Like, I'm the youngest in my family, and my older brother and sisters, one of my sisters didn't she went to a college, but it was kind of a 1 or 2 year thing as a secretary, but it was a big struggle, and they would work on the side, and they would have, I remember going to, my brother college years ago, and they were in some really old house, and it was really cold, and they struggled, and that was really common back then. And within a short period of time, things got a lot more comfortable. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we were kind of given everything in a on a plate. There's a whole generation, especially in Ireland, the UK. I think it's a little bit different in the United States. I think people give people in the United States a lot of kicking, but generally there's more respect. I'm not saying the United States is perfect or anything like that, for authority figures, and there's a work ethic in the United States, and that's why the United States has been successful, wealthy, things like that. They're hardworking. It's not because they stole money from other countries. They're generally incredibly hardworking. And that can manifest itself as good ways or bad ways. You know, it can be just a successful Christian businessman, or it can be somebody like, you know, a hard worker. Like, you might not like him, but Donald Trump, he's a hard worker. He didn't get to where he is by doing nothing. And so, but that's just the way it is. But anyway. Let's continue with this interview.
Now, they're not being taught that it's...
Oh, yeah. I have a bit of a brain freeze there, trying to remember exactly the point I was going to make. But there's been a generation starved, especially men, starved of instruction. How to be a man. Okay? And for whatever reason, you go into it, you know, for whatever reason, they have not been instructed in how to be men. And so what you have is kind of a lot of peer-to-peer, a lot of immaturity, sin. That's the main reason of all this stuff. Any of these things I mentioned, sin is the problem. People turning away from God. Lack of dependence on Christ. People breaking away from the covenant through unbelief. Children leaving the church, things like that. But from a very human level, why are things so bad? Like, there was a time, you go back 30, 40 years, there would be, you know, pick the family name and son. It was very common for one generation to spend time with another generation. It doesn't really happen anymore. There are many different reasons. Maybe the technology, maybe the comfort, maybe things have gotten busier. Well, actually, one of the reasons, you could talk about feminism, is because both parents are now at work. And that's very much had a detrimental effect on the time parents spend with children. Okay? I do very much think that for the first couple of years of life, maybe up until 5 or 6, at least, the wife, the mother, needs to stay at home with the children and raise them. At least for the first couple of years. Maybe then when they start school, maybe the wife can get, I don't know, 20, 30 hours a week. That's not politically correct anymore, is it? That the roles are different. But there's a starvation, there's no kind of... The instruction that a woman needs to be a woman is different to the instruction that a man needs to be a man. And a man, to be a man, how to run his home, practical things, go get a job, start working young, start saving money, be productive, things like that. And if a man, look, men, when they're not doing that, they're going to be miserable from a human standpoint because they're not doing what they're meant to be doing.
It's important to develop yourself.
But does it bother you that your audience is predominantly male? Isn't that a bit divisive?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's no more divisive than the fact that YouTube is primarily male and Tumblr is primarily female.
Isn't it?
Tumblr is primarily female.
But you're just saying that's the way it is.
Well, I'm not saying anything. It's just an observation that's the way it is. There's plenty of women that are watching my lectures and coming to my talks and buying my book.
One of the problems Kathy Newman has, and this just illustrates it, she has a problem with distinguishing between an observation, like the statistics. And again, it's the same with my videos. And I don't know, like there's, you know, if you go to a church... You know, most churches, a lot of churches, you probably think, you know, it's primarily female, actually. If any sex dominates at all in churches, at least churches I've been to and stuff like that over the years, generally, sometimes 50-50, but generally maybe a leaning more towards the female end. And my videos are Christian, but I don't know, 70-80% of the viewer, I don't know the exact number, that would be male. So, just because there's constructing a narrative based on an observation like that doesn't prove anything. And that's one of the things that Jordan Peterson keeps pointing out to her again and again. They take a narrative, and they insert it to all the data, and it proves everything, every piece of data they find, it proves the preconceived ideas. That's not journalism, that's not fact-checking.
Folks, it's just that the majority of them happen to be men.
What's in it for the women, though?
Well, what sort of partner do you want? Do you want an overgrown child? Or do you want someone to contend with that's going to help you and that
so
you can rely on?
Women have some sort of duty to sort of help fix the crisis of masculinity.
Well, it depends on what they want. No, I mean, it's exactly how I live.
Well, of course they do. Well, when you think about it, I don't think he talks about it here, but it's just like mothers, how they raise their children, especially boys. Look, the way, and just talk about this really, really quickly, because I'm just aware that I want to get through as much of this interview as possible. But the way you raise a boy is going to be different to the way you raise a girl. Okay? You would allow maybe boys to be wrestling on the floor and all that. I would not allow my young boy to be wrestling with a girl. A boy needs to learn very, very early in life. If he's my son and all that, I don't have any sons at the moment. I have two daughters. To respect and be gentle towards women. Things like that. Okay? And how to behave. It starts young. And if you don't start young, you're facing an uphill battle.
Hate it out. Like, women deeply want men who are competent and powerful. And I don't mean power in that they can exert tyrannical control over others. That's not power. That's just corruption. Power is competence. And why in the world would you not want a competent partner? Well, I know why, actually. You can't dominate a competent partner. So
you're
if you want
women
domination...
Want to dominate, is that what you're saying?
No, I'd say women who have had their relationships impaired, their relationships with men impaired, and who are afraid of such relationships, will settle for a weak partner because they can dominate them. But it's a suboptimal solution.
Absolutely. And I've go to Ireland, go to probably the majority of homes, not every home, but the majority of homes. I lived in Italy for a couple of years. Same thing. There's the kind of, in Italy, there was like the stereotypical Italian mamma who dominated the home. And you just see the Italian dad just in the corner, just go, va bene, just, whatever you want, sweetie. And I don't know, like, he's trying to explain it from a psychological point of view. But it's the effect of sin. Because what you will have in a sinful family is the children ruling over the parents. The desires and the whims of the children ruling over the parents. And the woman ruling over the man. Everything in reverse. Well, in a large sense, a man will lead one way or the other. But because he's abdication of his responsibilities, often abdication of his responsibilities, the woman ends up doing two roles. Think about it. It's not often that the man will do the woman's role as mother. And to be honest, I've seen one or two examples of that, and that can be quite disturbing. I'll be honest. Very feminine. I've seen one or two guys who just basically stay at home and do all, and just, they're very feminine, honestly. I haven't seen too many examples of it, but often what ends up happening, the mother or the wife ends up doing two jobs. Maybe three. She does a full-time job, right? But her job outside of the home. She's the mother. Cleans, does every, sorts out everything. I'm saying often, not in every situation. I'm not saying that if it's a temporary situation and for a while it has to be that the man stays home for a few weeks. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in general, if this is what you set up to do. And you shouldn't stay that way for very long. I'm talking about if maybe it's an emergency and you do it for a while, that's different. Okay, so please don't be emailing me saying, well, we didn't mean to do this. And no, I'm not talking about situations like that. Okay? But a man needs to work. Okay? So the woman ends up doing her role and the man's role. And what does she do? She's tired. She's frustrated. And then the man ends up with, well, what do I do? And that's often what happens in so many homes. You get... And so, you see, like in Irish homes, but some, in a lot of homes, on farms, I know of situations where sometimes the mother would take care of everything in the house, would do, you know, on the farms, would take care of the farm as well a lot of the time, and the man would go off drinking. Now, this is an effect of sin, the fall of man, unregenerate hearts that do not love God. So everything's in reverse. And Satan knows that if he attacks the family, unfortunately, the family will crumble. If you look at the statistics, Larry Elder, who is a kind of political commentator, a black political commentator, and he comments on the black community in the United States, that why is there such, why is there so many problems? Why is there so much crime? Why is there so many in prison? He says, because of fatherless homes. That has skyrocketed in the last few decades in the black American communities. Now, I find it sad that I have to say black American communities because I hate when communities get segregated based on skin color. It's just sad that that's the situation, but that's where parts in the United States are. I don't want to say every single part in the United States is like that. But he commented, I think it's, I don't know, 75%. Of black households, and that determined often, I'm talking from a human standpoint, right, that you're much more likely to live in poverty, and you're much more likely to go into things like prostitution and all this kind of stuff. So the father is incredibly important, even if you want to look at human statistics. Now, the Bible is very, very clear. The man is to lead. The man is to lead and to love and to nurture his wife. And look, in a sinful world where you have a family that is not bowing the knee to Christ, everything will be in reverse. Now, you will have exceptions. You will have families that do not love God, and you might have a tyrannical father over them who rules with an iron fist and maybe is very rough toward. There will be cultures. There's some cultures in the world, the man is very, quote unquote, in the true sense, misogynistic, very domineering, very tyrannical. But in a lot of cases, this is how it also bears out as well.
Do you
think that's what a lot of women are doing?
I think there's a substantial minority of women who do that. And I think it's very bad for them. They're very unhappy. It's very bad for their partners, although the partners get the advantage of not having to take any responsibility.
But what gives you the right to say that?
But it's true. It's true. The father ends up with zero responsibility. Honestly. And I've seen situations like this. Now, I also do know homes that are not Christian where the father does take responsibility and does lead. So this isn't every case. Every sinful, unregenerate heart is not exactly the same, okay? Just to point that out.
I mean, maybe that's how women want their relationships, those women. I mean, you're making these vast generalizations.
I'm a clinical psychologist.
Brett, you're saying you've done your research and women are unhappy, dominated.
it's like you're making these... I just find that funny. It's like, oh, you're making all these, generalizations. I'm a clinical psychologist. This is my job. I'm not a big fan of the psychology field, by the way. I spent a year, years ago, I wanted to be a psychologist myself. This is before I was a Christian. And, yeah, I thought it was more of a science than it was. And it's... There are some people who do delve into genuine research. At times, like Jordan Peterson and all that. But generally... Look, anything, any knowledge, any science just means knowledge, by the way, it's synonymous with that neglects the truth of the Word of God will always be inept.
dominating men.
I didn't say they were unhappy dominating men. I said it was a bad long-term solution.
Okay, you said it was making them miserable.
Yes, it is. And it depends on the time frame. I mean, there's intense pleasure in momentary domination. That's why people do it all the time. But it's no formula for a long-term, successful long-term relationship. That's reciprocal, right? Any long-term relationship is reciprocal, virtually by definition. So,
let me put a quote to you from the book. Well, you say there are whole disciplines in universities forthrightly hostile towards men. These are the areas of study dominated by the postmodern stroke neo-Marxist claim that Western culture in particular is an oppressive structure created by white men to dominate and exclude women. But then I want to put...
Minorities too, dominate and exclude
okay, sure.
And women.
But I want to put to you that here in the UK, for example, let's take that as an example, the gender pay gap stands at just over 9%. You've got women at the BBC recently saying that the broadcaster is illegally paying them less than men to do the same job. You've got only 7 women running the top FTSE 100 companies.
Yeah. Whenever I hear this thing about the same job, well, before he gives his answer, it's not illegal to pay duty. Forget about the sex issue, whether it's a male or female. It is not illegal, nor should it be, in my opinion, ever, to pay somebody else, one person, especially when it comes to TV, you know, movies and all this kind of stuff. Just say you've got a guy, you've got a talk show, 9 o'clock, Friday night. You got a guy with a big profile, bringing a lot of viewers, maybe double listeners. Actually, one person will bring in like 1 million views. And the other guy will bring in like 100,000. Who are you going to pay more? You're going to pay him exactly the same? That would be ridiculous. Okay, so you can't always say like for like, and just because this group gets paid less than this group, therefore it's because of discrimination. Now, it may have to do with discrimination, but you've never proven it at all. What you would do in such a situation, people in the free market should be allowed to negotiate their contracts. And they say the BBC won't pay them what they feel they're worth or something like that, it's too low or something like that, well, go somewhere else. Go to maybe Channel 4, maybe if that's willing to pay them more. But what will determine how much they get paid is how much they are in demand. And if they're great hosts, they're great at their job, people will pay them in order to retain their services. There will be competition for labor. Back, I don't know, prior to the introduction of minimum wage and all that in the United States, how prominent, how wealthy, how high were the wages in the United States? In cities like Detroit. Back in the 1920s, I think Ford Motor Company paid the highest wages in the world. But the economics aside, why is it morally wrong? We've been conditioned to think this, but why is it morally wrong to pay one person one thing and one person another thing? It's what you agree in the contract. The other person, the worker, doesn't have to do that. It's not a gun to their head. It's not that kind of slavery. They agree to do it for the X amount of wages. And if it's not good enough or it's not high enough, they can just say, no, I want more. Negotiate. Say, explain why. And if they won't sign it, and just say, for example, like I teach English as a foreign language, I get paid a certain amount, and just say, well, that's not high enough. I can go to another school and get paid more. Well, I would do that. Well, if it was a good school and it was a good place to work and all that kind of thing. There's other factors involved as well, especially as a Christian. But you get what I mean? Why is it, you know, because you're never going to have a perfect system, but you're going to have a situation where the people, why do you pay one person more than another person? Because their service, they're more valuable in the market than the other person. Look, people talk about, you know, in the entertainment industry and all that, but if you get a big name female star against a guy who's barely known, the female star will be paid more. So it's not because, oh, she's a woman, I'm going to pay. It's just sheer nonsense. The whole thing is just sheer nonsense. It's comparing apples and oranges, not comparing like for like. And often the decisions that men make are different than women. Lifestyle choices are different. Okay? Men and women are just different. And you have to look into those statistics, not just the median number, say, oh, there's 9% difference. It doesn't prove a whole lot. It doesn't say a whole lot. And it actually can be explained very, very easily by looking at lifestyle choices. For example, you know, more men will go into engineering, but more women go into lower paying jobs like social workers and all this kind of thing. Why does uniformity of results mean equality? What does uniformity of results really mean? Everybody gets paid the same. If everybody's got the same income and the same wages and the same everything, what do you have? Communism? Now, I'm not saying that everybody who says this kind of rhetoric in an unthinking fashion is therefore a communist. And I think it's easy to go to that conclusion, but I think we should just be careful with that. Oh, you're a communist. No, like, just deal with their arguments. If somebody, if you get into a discussion and you want to go through the data with somebody and all that kind of thing, obviously the most important thing, if you get onto the topic of their soul, which is the most important issue, forget about all this other stuff. But people talk about lots of different things. So let's continue with this interview.
So it seems to a lot of women that they're still being dominated and excluded, to quote your words back to you.
It does seem that way, but multivariate analysis of the pay gap indicate that it doesn't exist.
But that's so not true, is it? I mean, that 9% pay gap, that's a gap between median hourly earnings between men and women.
But
that
multiple,
is it.
Yeah, but there's multiple reasons for that. One of them is gender, but it's not the only reason. Like, if you're a social scientist worth your salt, you never do a univariate analysis. Like, you say, well, women in aggregate are paid less than men. Okay, well, then we break it down by age. We break it down by occupation. We break it down by interest. We break it down by personality.
But you're saying basically it doesn't matter if women aren't getting to the top, because that's what's skewing that gender pay gap, isn't it? You're saying, well, that's just a fact of life. Women aren't necessarily going to get to the top.
No.
She does this over and over again, and this is why people were so annoyed with Cathy Newman in the first place. You're saying, and the thing is, he never did say this at all during it. And that's the thing. When you have a conversation, sharing the gospel or sharing some other biblical truths, because there are biblical truths related to economics, honestly, there are. The Bible does not support, actually is against, communism and socialism. Yes, this was talked about. This is talked about, for example, if you go to the Ten Commandments by Thomas Watson, references made to thou shalt not steal as a repeated, you know, it's not called socialism and communism, but common ownership. So these ideas, why they were, while the words capitalism wasn't used and all that kind of thing a couple hundred years ago, the ideas were, they're very old ideas about common ownership. Do you really own that property? Is it the state? Is it the common ownership of all goods? Different terminology that's used. You know, that goes back to Thomas Aquinas, Aristotle, Plato. They've all talked about this. The property rights, to be called today.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't matter either.
You're saying,
I'm saying there are multiple reasons for it.
Yeah, but those reasons, why should women put up with those reasons? Why should women be content not to get to the top?
I'm not saying that they should put up with it. I'm saying that the claim that the wage gap between men and women is only due to sex is wrong. And it is wrong. There's no doubt about that. The multivariate analysis have been done.
Well,
so I can give you an example.
You keep on talking about multivariate analysis.
Let me give you an example.
I'm saying that 9% pay gap exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a gap between men and women. I'm not saying why it exists, but it...
It's like, I don't care what the reasons are. There's a 9%. We need everybody to have the same number. And this is another thing that comes up, you see, political debates a lot. You know, people talk about the great injustice of inequality between, say, oh, I don't know, in Parliament they might talk about income inequality. Is income inequality wrong? How could it be possibly wrong? is it wrong that I'm poorer than, I don't know, the whoever the CEO of Microsoft is today, or, you know, or Apple or whatever else? Is it wrong that we have different... How is that wrong? That means you're saying that communism is the only fair way. Private property doesn't exist. And then commands from the Bible, like thou shalt not steal, become nonsensical by definition.
Exists. Now, yeah, if you're a woman, that seems pretty unfair.
You have to say why it exists.
But do you agree that it's unfair? If you're a woman...
Not necessarily.
And on average, you're getting paid 9% less than a man.
But she's not giving any argument for it. It's the same, you know, the same kind of, like, without explaining further, well, what if, just for example, I know this is not the case, but what if in, and you're simplifying, and this is a very simplified analogy, but just say men love medicine, and they're all medics or, yeah, doctors, okay? And all the women just love, you know, go for a low-paid job, maybe an au pair or something like that, okay? And they don't like any other job. I know this is probably going to annoy somebody somewhere, but I'm just saying, just imagine that that's the situation, and you're saying, the pay gap is huge. There's a 50% pay gap. Well, and you say, well, is that fair? What you're saying then is it wrong that the doctors get paid more than the au pairs? Which would be ridiculous. I hope that people will realize that. So there's different choices of jobs. Men and women will choose different jobs. They will like different things. That's not wrong. That's actually a good thing. Because men and women, I mean, young men out there, I'm actually trying to do a podcast and this is a substage. Men out there, don't look for a mirror image of yourself. That's narcissism. You should look for a wife, a potential wife, and a potential mother who will fit biblical characteristics, who's a godly woman, who will challenge you to grow in areas, will basically draw you closer to the Lord. That's not going to be a mirror image of you. For example, if you like playing computer games all day and you waste your time like that, and you find somebody else who does the same thing, a woman who does exactly the same thing, that's not going to help you in your spiritual growth. Actually, it will make you worse. But just say you do that. Maybe you waste too much time playing computer games and all that. I hate them. Throw them in the bin. You're wasting your time. I mean, it's amazing. 20 years ago, it was the thing of kids. Still is, by the way, if you ask me. But if it's a godly woman, what does it challenge you to do? She's not exactly the same as you, but you respect her. Like, myself and my wife, we share many things in common. I think what we mostly share in common is the Bible. We our love for Scripture. But we're different. That's not a bad thing. I should learn things from her. She learns things from me. Okay? We complement each other. Don't try to find the mirror image of yourself. It's narcissism. You should be compatible. I'm not saying that it should be some kind of a mechanical thing. You know, the first time I saw my wife, I still remember it. I had kind of butterflies in my stomach when I first saw her, and I was kind of had a mad crush on her for about a year before I finally actually contacted her and just couldn't take it anymore. I had to know if she liked me back, and turns out we started writing to each other, and a couple of months later we were, you know, we were courting in the same country because we were in different countries at that time. And I go through that in I think it's like episode number 97, years ago. If anybody wants to listen to that, that was, if you type in the word marriage, a testimony, or courtship, something like that, it was done a long, long time ago. I think it was back in 2013. And just 5 years ago now, we're nearly married. So people want to listen to that. I did that right after we got married. But you don't look for a mirror image of each other. I'm not saying you get somebody who's completely different. Somebody compatible spiritually. You want the same things. And that you, You could say you help, you know, one person's weak in one area, the other person calls you, draws you, teaches you, and then vice versa. She's strong in some areas and I'm weak, and I'm strong in some areas that she's weak. But we complement each other, and that's the way it should be. The role of men and women. Don't follow the lie that there's no differences between men and women. It's funny that they say, when the feminists talk about the feminist issue and all this kind of stuff, it's men and women are different, and women, and da 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 da. But then when it comes to transgender and all this kind of stuff, well, there's no differences, and you can change over and do whatever you want. Consistency, not a, kind of lacking. Well, let's continue. Let's get through this.
That's not fair, is it?
It depends on why it's happening. I can give you an example. Okay. There's a personality trait known as agreeableness. Agreeable people are compassionate and polite. And agreeable people get paid less than less agreeable people for the same job. Women are more agreeable than men.
Again, a vast generalization. Some women are not more agreeable than men.
Yes, that's true. But that's right. And some women get paid more than men.
So you were saying that by and large, women are too agreeable to get the pay rises they deserve.
No, I'm saying that that's one component of a multivariate equation that predicts salary. It accounts for maybe 5% of the variance, something like that.
So surely
you need about another 20, you need about another 18 factors, one of which is gender. And there is prejudice, there's no doubt about that, but it accounts for a much smaller proportion of the variance in the pay gap than the radical feminists claim.
Okay, so rather than denying the pay gap exists, which is what you did at the beginning of this conversation, shouldn't you say to women, rather than being agreeable and not asking...
He never actually denied it, but it was... And this is one of the reasons I've never been asked in one of these big... I've never been asked in the BBC and all that. I think it's a lot of time it's a waste of time. Channel 4, and this is a kind of an example of the feminism in the media. I don't know. I think it would depend on the situation. If it's a panel of people and you get an opportunity to express your view, I think that's good. But I think a lot of the time, these can be hit pieces. I think if it's live and there's no editing, I think that's not a bad idea. But you just cannot trust, you know, groups like, you know, can't trust Channel 4, BBC. If they're splicing it up, cutting it up, and you're in the media. But I think enough people are savvy enough to that.
For a pay rise, go and ask for a pay rise. Make yourself disagreeable with your boss.
Oh, definitely. There's that. But I also didn't deny it existed. I denied it existed because of gender.
Okay.
Because I'm very, very, very careful with my words.
So the pay gap exists. You accept that. But you're saying, I mean, the pay gap between men and women exists. You're saying it's not because of gender. It's because women are too agreeable to ask for pay rises.
So make one of the reasons.
Okay, one of the reasons. So why not get them to ask for a pay rise?
I've done that. I've done that many.
It's just amazing that a person who is doing an interview, and it just shows you, I don't know what, just the, there's just such a narrative-driven agenda in the media. Is she typical of everybody in the media? No. But there's varying shades of this in the media, unfortunately. What I'm saying is not everybody's exactly like her. She's one of the worst interviewers I've seen on television, if I'm being honest. Very aggressive. Poor interviewer. Never actually wants to listen to the interview. I've seen interviews done by people and, you know, disagreeing massively with the other person on the other side. But you bring them on to interview them, you listen. Now, you might want to refute them after they've said their piece. But there's no point in asking a question if you're not even going to let them answer. And if you then try to interject what you think they mean, when, and it just seems like either, there's two possibly, Kathy Newman just could not keep up with what he was saying. Because it's basically, there's an agenda, there's kind of a narrative in her head. And then just, it's, anything he says is just meaningless to her. Which is really sad, because, but it was interesting, look, Channel 4 is awful. Channel 4, BBC's bad, but Channel 4, I think, is probably worse. I don't watch it much of it, really. I scan through it sometimes.
Many times in my career.
And they
they do it all the time. You can, so one of the things that you do as a clinical psychologist is assertiveness training. So you might say, often you treat people for anxiety, you treat them for depression, and maybe the next most common category after that would be assertiveness training. And so I've had many, many women, extraordinarily competent women, in my clinical and consulting practice, and we've put together strategies for their career development that involve continual pushing, competing for higher wages, and often tripled their wages within a five-year period.
Because often, not always, often, well, women can be competitive too, by the way, but often men are very competitive. Just look at sports, and boys will be kind of trying to run each other, things like that. And women often are like not too bothered. They just want to chill out, talk to their friends and all that. They're more balanced. Men and women are just different, okay? So you're saying you want to compete in this? You got to compete with competitive people. But anyway.
Can you celebrate that?
Of course.
So do you agree that you would be happy if that pay gap was eliminated completely? Because that's all the radical feminists are saying.
It would depend on how it was eradicated and how the disappearance of it was measured.
And you're saying if it's at the cost of men, that's a problem.
Oh, there's all sorts of things that it could be at the cost of. It could even be at the cost of women's own interests. So,
because they might not be happy if they get equal pay.
No, because it might interfere with other things that are causing the pay gap that women are choosing to do.
Like having children.
Well, or choosing careers that actually happen to be paid less, which women.
Yeah, because like often, again, women more, you know, social work, for example, more women tend to go into roles like that. Like, you know, you can compare doctors and nurses. Generally, statistically speaking, a higher percentage of nurses will be women. Okay? And you get much more, and this is just, I'm not going through exact statistics here, but just giving an example. But just say more men, again, are doctors. To be honest, I think it's quite even, actually. It might be about 50-50. Might even be more women than men, but just for argument's sake, more men are doctors. Well, how would you eradicate that pay gap without eradicating the pay difference between a doctor and a nurse? And obviously, the training, the qualifications, and the what needed for the job is much higher for a doctor than a nurse. Again, in order to reach this, and this is what he's saying, right? If you're going to completely eradicate it, are you talking about how would you eradicate it? The differences, you're going to have to eradicate the differences between men and women. You know, force maybe women to go into more high-paying jobs that they don't necessarily want to do. They don't, you know, they want to maybe go into child care and development and say, well, that doesn't pay any good. We want to eradicate the pay difference, so you got to go into something else. An engineering job, and maybe you hate engineering, you've got no interest in it.
Do a lot of.
But why shouldn't women have the right to choose not to have children, or the right to choose those demanding careers?
They do. They can.
It's like, I'm just going to, you know, you can just see, it jumps straight into, but why shouldn't the women have a choice not to have children? And he here points he doesn't even make. Now, the whole interview kind of continues like that. If you want to watch the end of this interview, you can type in. It's in number 14 at the moment, trending on YouTube. But Jordan Peterson, debate on the gender pay gap, campus protests in postmodernism. And it's on the Channel 4 News YouTube channel. And it was posted a couple of days ago, and it's gone viral. But this last clip, this is later on in the interview. And if you want to find this, a couple of people posted this, kind of like, you got me, Jordan Peterson leaves liberal reporters speechless on transgenderism. Just listen to this. This is a bit later in, because I don't want to go through the whole thing. The interview kind of follows the same pattern throughout. He says one thing, and she says, well, you know, like she says, you know, he'll say something to the, like, oh, the sky is blue. So you're saying that women are horrible. And, you know, like, it's just completely twisted out of beyond. You just wonder, is she listening? And if it's so male-dominated and all this kind of stuff, how is she the one giving the interview and all this, but I digress. You know, like, women, there's some jobs that women dominate. Teaching, for example. Often, a lot of teaching positions, women. Universities. The universities I've come in contact with, the majority of them, the majority of the students, I think about 70% often, are women. Graduates doing far better as women. And this is the identity politics of the left and the every you have to be a victim. And it's a victimhood league, and who wins in the victimhood championship? Okay, you know, is it the blacks, Hispanics, or whatever group? But who always comes out at the bottom? And unfortunately, they're trying to compete, which is sad. But white men at the bottom. No privilege points for them at the bottom. Now, unfortunately, this is what's created, I believe, this is what's created the disgusting, horrendous alt-right. Now, if you want to hear more about the alt-right, now, Jordan Peterson is not alt-right at all. From what I know about him. And I've talked about the alt-right before in the program. Just type in alt-right in MegiddoRadio.com. There's a program on that. Not everybody says that their alt-right is racist, but I believe that the movement, a lot of it, is racist, unfortunately. Now, but this is created because at the bottom of this victimhood league, you have white men. Or maybe in second place, white women. I'm not too sure who would come, you know, get the wood, you know, second to last or whatever. But because of that, now what are they trying to do? A lot of these white people who don't really have any grounding on constitutional rights and all this kind of stuff that would be in the West and Magna Carta and all this kind of stuff. They're kind of a bit reactionary, a lot of them on the internet, and they don't really have stable foundational views, so they're going from a movement to another movement. And I've noticed this with some YouTube channels. A couple of years ago, there were this, now they're this, now they're this, and they change. Now a lot of them are in the alt-right, because it's an identity for them. Oh, what do I have? How do we unite with these people? Oh, we got white skin. Oh, that's a weird way of uniting with people. I've never understood racism. Never understood it. It's just crazy to me. The Bible's very clear. We're all one race. Now, there's different cultures. There's different family, how you're raised and things like that. But the Bible's very clear. We're all one race. Now, and unfortunately, a lot of the whenever you've got, like, the victimhood status for all these minorities and women and LGBT and all this, it's kind of flipped around now because a lot of white men are kind of angry, sometimes justifiably so, but, I think, how would I put this? There's a lot of racism from, you know, Black Lives Matter and all these kind of groups, but unfortunately, it's been returned back with alternative types of racism from the outright. Two wrongs don't make a right. It doesn't justify it because, and you know what? There's not, the outright is basically the white version. Hey, you might even argue it's not even as bad as Black Lives Matter because it's not quite as communistic or whatever. But just because one group is racist and employs identity politics doesn't mean it's okay for the other group to do the same thing. This is the last clip we're going to look at before we round up today's show. Pray for me that I can get the response done to Michael Brown before next Tuesday. And also pray for the other show that's going to come after it. Probably on the subject of Calvinism, but I won't say much more than that. It might be a response radio program.
It's been very controversial for you. And this is, you got in trouble for refusing to call trans men and women by their preferred personal pronouns.
No, that's not actually true. I got in trouble because I said I would not follow the compelled speech dictates of the federal and provincial government, I actually never got in trouble for not calling anyone anything.
Right.
That didn't happen.
You wouldn't follow the change of law, which was designed
not
to
once it was law.
Discrimination.
No.
Well, that's
what they said it was designed to do.
Okay. You cited freedom of speech in that. Why should your right to freedom of speech trump a trans person's right not to be offended?
Because in order to be able to think, you have to risk being offensive.
I mean, could you imagine if the dictates of the state law, whatever about free speech, you know, because like this whole thing about I'm offended shuts down a debate. And what about it? You see, the thing is, if Christians or just general conservatives are offended, nobody cares. So how do you define what is offensive? The government defines that. It becomes a tyranny very quickly. Can't talk about that. You can't have that oppressive view. Shut it down. Close it off. Hate speech. That is tyrannical, without a doubt.
Look at the conversation we're having right now. You know, like you're certainly willing to risk offending me in the pursuit of truth. Why should you have the right to do that? It's been rather uncomfortable.
Well, I'm very glad I put you on the spot.
Well, I'm going but you get my point. You get my point. It's like you're doing what you should do, which is digging a bit to see what the hell's going on.
So
and that is what you should do. But you're exercising your freedom of speech to certainly risk offending me. And that's fine. I think more power to you as far as I'm concerned.
So you haven't sat there and I'm just trying to work that out. I mean,
ha, gotcha.
You have got me. You have got me. I'm trying to work that through.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there. That's a good... Like, he stumped her. No, that can happen in an interview, honestly. Even if you're in the right. Sometimes people make maybe too much of a big deal about, oh, you couldn't... No comeback. That means the person... It doesn't actually mean that the person's view is wrong, but... I don't know. Hopefully, thought of the double standards that is employed by the left rattled around in her head. I don't know. But that's the thing. She had the right there to offend Jordan Peterson. Now, I don't agree with a lot of things Jordan Peterson says. But the fact that he is now seen as highly controversial is absolutely scary. Because, you know what, to be honest, I think somebody like Jordan Peterson probably be seen quite, I don't know, maybe quite lefty, maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago. You know, you notice with the old left, and I mean the old left, maybe from 20, 30 years ago, is now kind of the right wing. And because there's no real conservatism anymore. It's not really based on, you know, constitutional rights and things like that and shared values. It's very much reactionary to, we're sick of the Marxist left. So we're going to react against that. So they're against the family. We're going to be pro-family. They're against the state. We're going to be nationalistic. But unfortunately, that's as far as, you know, they don't go much further than that. And they still bring over a lot of the collectivist baggage with them. And unfortunately, they get kind of a merger between. They get kind of, not to be inflammatory because, like, you know, to use the word fascism, but a merger between corporation and state. The Nazi movement in Germany was very much a reaction against, in a lot of ways, against the communists destroying things in the 1930s in Germany. So, just because you're against a group that's really, really bad, like Antifa or something like that, doesn't mean that you're good. You can be just as bad as each other. You can have crime families fighting with each other. It doesn't mean the crime families are any good, either of them. Okay? So, we have to base our beliefs not on a reactionary ideology. Here's Marxism. I'm going to go the opposite direction of that. But it must be based on the truth of the Word of God. How do we know what is good? God's law. God's truth. It's summarized in the Ten Commandments. And also I say summarized. That is the law, but it's summarized down. I just pray by the grace of God that I think we should think about, you know, when we see things, how can we respond biblically to the things that we see in the world, to the conversations we have? And by God's grace, we can point those truths towards the Bible and the questions that arise in life. Why is the family in a mess? Why are all these things happening? Sin. Things, problems that go right back to the fall of man. And until we turn to the gospel, we will never see true joy. And I mean true joy. You'll see temporary lust and things that satisfy but for a season. But true joy and everlasting life in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I pray that you all who are listening this night, or whenever you're listening, know our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, that you have a true and saving faith, not the faith that of the devils, as James spoke about, that they tremble, but that you truly love and embrace our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, that you serve him from the heart, that you've been born again, made a new creature, and that you love to serve him. And how do you know that? You keep his commandments, not perfectly. That you love his law, not perfectly. But you have been made a new creature in Christ Jesus. And you're growing in the grace of the knowledge of the truth. I pray this has been a blessing to your soul. Talk to you again Tuesday, Lord willing.